I fell in love the first time I saw it. I was taken on such a emotional roller coaster ride. I got so attached to the characters, and yeah, so that feeling's never left. It was just what the way that story is written, it's magical, you know, the way it's written. The story itself, the movie, has its own beating heart.
Welcome to My Movie Story. I'm your host, Brian McAleer. This is the podcast where we dive into the movies that have shaped us. Each episode, we sit down with a special guest to discuss their all-time favorite film, the movie that changed their life, and the one film they think everyone needs to see. Get ready as we journey through the cinematic worlds that make us who we are. This is My Movie Story. My guest for this episode is P.T. Russell. P.T. is an artist and writer. Originally from the Bahamas, she now lives in Ontario, Canada. Through her creativity, she uses her art to externalize imagery and anecdotes from within. As a writer, she writes fiction and non-fiction pieces. P.T.'s podcast, Journaling with P.T., is a show that highlights creative voices and emerging artists from around the world. On top of all of this, P.T. considers herself to be a lifelong cinephile, and she loves to talk movies. Now, here's our interview with P.T. Hey, movie lovers, welcome to My Movie Story, and please welcome our guest to the show, P.T. Nice to see you. How are you today?
Good.
Yep.
I'm excellent.
Fantastic, fantastic. It's great to see
Yes.
you again, and you know, we first connected a little while back, and we've been
Yes.
chatting movies ever since. And yeah, now we're online, ready to go. So, been really looking forward to our
Finally, yay.
conversation. Yeah.
Yes.
That's
Movies are
great.
always exciting, so I'm ready to go.
Fantastic, fantastic. Our viewers and listeners just heard a little bit about you in our intro there, but yeah, we'll start off with you, PT. Tell us a bit about yourself, you know, where you live, what you do, and you know, what's your story?
P.T. Russell, I'm an artist, a visual artist. I'm also a podcast host. I write. I'm a writer. I write stories. I write screenplays, and I'm in Canada. I'm currently, where the weather is a little bipolar, but we're making the best of it. And I'm also a mother of some children,
Very nice.
who are children of the corn, children of whatever, but they're children, so I'm good.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Nice to be here.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you. Yeah, and can you tell us a little bit about the art and the writing that you do? Like, what do you sort of specialize in? And yeah, what's your thing?
Well, the art that I do is more expressionistic. I'm just more abstract art. I do some realism, but I prefer to just kind of be spontaneous with my work and lots of colors. It's very reflective of my native Bahamas because I'm originally from the Bahamas, but I'm in Canada. I've been in Canada for about 14 years, perhaps somewhere around thereabouts, and so a lot of the palette that I use in my paintings are, you see behind me, if you can see behind me, that's like that's an abstract piece that I did, but I do dabble in some realism from time to time. It's not my favorite, you know, but I can do it as well. So yeah, that's the art bit. And now a little bit about the podcast. It's Journaling with PT, and I host creative voices, emerging artists from different all disciplines, actors, filmmakers, other visual artists. It's just wonderful having conversations with interesting people from all over the
Absolutely.
world,
Yeah.
and some of my
And
myself as well.
where could people find your podcast if they wanted to have a listen and check it out?
Well, we're everywhere on all the platforms, Journaling with PT and on Spotify, wherever you have podcasts,
Great.
it's available, even on AfroPods and Jio Sauvan, I think it's called. They're in India. I think it's pronounced that way. So it's there, it's on Samsung devices, Samsung refrigerators and stoves and everything and washers. I was
Everywhere.
surprised that that was even a thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can find me there as well. And at Journaling with PT on Instagram and Facebook, and also you can reach me at journalingwithpt@gmail.com.
Fantastic. Awesome. And we'll share all
And
those links.
ptrussell.com is my website, so
PTRussell.com. Awesome. And we'll share all those links here for people watching the video or those
Yes.
listening. You can find them in the show notes. So we'll definitely do that and check out PT's work. There's some interesting guests that she's had on her show for sure. Awesome. Well, thank you, PT, for telling us a bit more about your background, what you do, and I'm sure more and more will come up as we talk about your three films. And I don't think I've been as excited for an episode as I have with yours in a long time, because these three films are. These are big movies that we're going to be talking about, right? And iconic movies. Each film introduced really iconic characters to the world of cinema. Some of them gave way to these franchises and that are still going on after all these years. And they've worked their way into the common lexicon. So lots to unpack here. And we're exploring themes from things like monsters, villains, the survival of the fittest, the family, suburban life. I think we're going to cover every topic under the sun. So we'll try our best to fit in all the main
Yes.
parts. So without further ado, let's jump in because there's lots to cover. And we're going to start off with the film that you think everyone must see. So please tell us, what is that film?
The Predator.
Predator.
Yes.
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Yes. Dun 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 dun.
It kills for pleasure.
He was skinned alive.
It hunts for sport.
He's killing us one at a time.
We're all gonna die.
But this time, it's picked the wrong man to hunt.
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
Century Fox presents Arnold Schwarzenegger. Predator. The hunt begins Friday, June 12th at theaters everywhere.
Yeah, everyone should see The Predator if you haven't. If you've never heard of it, then you need to Google it and check it out. There's been lots of other parts, but I'm speaking about the original Predator of 1987.
Yep.
So that's what we'll be discussing.
Cool. Starring Arnold Schwarzenegger in at the peak
Yes,
of his
yes.
80s action dominance.
Yeah, Arnold Schwarzenegger and
there's Carl Weathers.
Carl Weathers, Bill Duke.
Bill Duke.
Jesse the Body is
Yep.
in there as well. A few of the other characters, I can't remember their names right now, but I
Yep.
know that Jean-Claude Van Damme, he did have played
Yes.
some parts of the Predator.
That's right.
At some point, I think during the initial, I don't know if it's pre-production or something, but I can't remember the actor who played the Predator, who was in the Predator actual suit.
Yep, that was
His name might
Kevin
slip me
Peter
down as
Hall,
well.
was his name,
Yes.
who
Right.
was, yeah, quite famous. He played, he was
Really?
also Harry from Harry and the Hendersons, or Bigfoot. But yeah, Kevin Peter Hall was around quite a bit in the 80s, played a lot of those characters in tall suits and before CGI and all of that.
Right,
Yeah.
yeah, all of
But it
that.
was Van Damme
So.
early on in the film. And then I think they were saying, like, he was very obviously very athletic and had the martial arts background. And then when they needed to do the scenes with just the Predator and Arnie, they needed the Predator to tower over Arnie, of course. So that's when they brought in Kevin Peter Hall, who was over 7 feet tall or something like that. So
Yes.
yeah, he was a big guy.
Very imposing. He's
Absolutely.
perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
He was. So if take me back to when Predator came out, was this a film that you were lucky enough to see at the movies, or did you discover it sometime later?
I discovered it sometime later. I think was that a dollar film that I saw it though? I can't remember. It is a blur the first time that I would have seen it.
Sure.
But when I did start to watch it, I was stuck just in watching it continuously. I had it on VHS and had my own copy. And my brother, he's no longer with us, so it's a memory that I would always cherish, just watching that film with him, just
Yeah.
over and over and over. Especially we had our favorite parts that we would sometimes fast forward it to and then freeze frame. And the handshake between Carl Weathers
Yep,
And
the famous handshake.
that was just, it was solid. You know, it was just something about that, it's just the camaraderie that we loved. And of course, the first time that the Predator is revealed, that was another fully revealed. It was shocking
Yes.
To see him because the way that the film is done, it's so suspenseful. They just give you little peeps
Yeah,
of just
brilliant.
this and that and the blood and just like the way he's seeing with the vision that I don't, is it infrared that he sees?
Infrared, yeah. So heat,
Alien
like heat
vision, whatever
seeking
it is.
vision, yeah.
Yeah, he's seeking, okay. And so all of that, it just kind of draws you in with it, and it's very suspenseful. So I just remember just taking our time with that and freeze framing a lot of freeze framing to see what was this, and because we'd never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
And that was just very fascinating to see
Absolutely.
something that's not unlike other films that we'd seen up to that point.
Yeah, it was so unique, wasn't it? Because this came out in the 80s, so the special effects were advancing and they could make a film like this. And aliens had been portrayed on movies before, but nothing like this. And I think the big appeal of it was, when they were marketing the film, there was no reveal of the Predator. You had to go and see the film to see what this Predator was, right? No internet back then, so no one's spoiling it or leaking photos online, none of that. So there was so much mystery around it. And I remember the tagline of the poster was like something like, he was the Terminator, but now he is the target or something like that. So it kind of flipped the image of Schwarzenegger, who was this unstoppable killing machine throughout the 80s. And then all of a sudden he's scared. He's running for his life. It's like, wow, we've never seen Arnie like this. He's outmatched here. And that was a big part of the appeal, I thought, was like at the start they rock up, these guys, and they're like superhuman commandos, and they sweep through the jungle. They take out the private army like it's just another day at the office. And then the Predator shows up, picks them off one by one. And like you said, the suspense really builds, the fear, the tension. And these guys who you think would be afraid of nothing all of a sudden are fearing for their life. So I thought that was a really great element of it as well, and that's really intensified as we see more and more of the Predator being revealed and all of that. So I think it's a genius film, the way it was, the suspense was built up and the reveal. Yeah, and you can watch it over and over again and you never tire of it, right?
Absolutely not. I saw it a few weeks ago, and the first thing that came to mind, I was watching it the last time I'd seen it, was like the Friday the 13th films, you know, that or any typical slasher film. It's like the same kind of suspense, and it starts off with a group of teenagers or whatever, right? And then just one by one, they take them down, and it's the same because it's a very genre bending film, right? It's like you have something that's adventure, something that looks like maybe a war film, because you have all the army guys together. And of course, Arnold, I mean, who doesn't love him? And so he's at the helm, and the helicopters, and just the dialogue is just really quick and witty, and I don't know, just memorable.
That's right.
Just all of the elements just work so well. And of course, the music, the way they use the music with the suspense, what's not to love?
Yeah,
All the
that's right.
guys with their unique personalities, the way they're so fleshed out, like I couldn't picture anyone else playing Bill Duke's character.
Definitely.
I can't remember what he's called in the
Mac.
film right now, because
Mac.
right, but I couldn't. Yeah, just everyone had their little quirks.
They
Yeah, the
did.
one with like the dirty jokes, and
Yeah.
so everything, you know, everything worked. And what was that? The not sense the seeker. He was like the trail, the indigenous
Billy was his
soldier,
name. Yeah.
Billy.
Yeah,
Yeah,
and he knew something was up.
and
Like he could sense that,
yes,
and they were being
always.
followed. Yeah.
And because of what he was saying and what he would sense intuitively, for me, it made it even more suspenseful, because I was always looking at him like, oh boy, you know what's gonna come. But it's just like the way that all the characters played together lent to to the narrative being so interesting and intriguing. And every part of the film, like I said, the way it's broken up into pieces, it just starts with one way, then there's the you think it's going to go one way if you haven't seen it yet, and it just takes on another direction. And I love that, because it's like you're watching like I said, two or three different genres of film.
Yes.
In one.
You are.
Yeah, yeah. You have like action, the thriller piece, the slasher bit when he starts to really kill, and it gives you a little bit of an inkling when you see the bodies hanging. They go, goodness, what is this thing?
What is this? Yeah, what is this predator? Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
And so when they have a few taglines like if it can bleed, it can kill it or something.
Yeah, if it bleeds, we can kill it.
Maybe his blood doesn't even, his blood is alien. I don't know. I just love that. I love it. It's fluorescent. It's just, you know, when they did the sequels, I was like, okay, I already knew about what was going to happen. So it didn't do it for me with all the sequels. It's like, whatever. Yep. Except when Prey came out. Prey was something that was a little different. But beside that is, even though I know it's coming because I've seen it so many times, because I've seen it definitely over 100 times.
Yep.
I usually watch it on mute. And that's the issue with me. Most of the films I watch are on mute. I watch them, especially if I've seen them before. I want to see the visuals. I want to, the things that I want to see, like, okay, well, he had that in his pocket. Okay, that's
right.
I didn't realize he did this. For some reason, I'm just super hyper focused on what was happening visually.
That's interesting.
And
that's so a really interesting way. A really interesting way to watch a movie, like, because having seen it so many times, you're watching it on mute, but then you can probably remember a lot of the dialogue. And you're hearing, you're watching them talk and kind of hearing the voices. You're hearing that music at certain key points. So, yeah, I'll have to try that. That's a really unique way.
Yeah, because then you'll be really dialed into, like, especially the lead characters and their physicality and what they're doing and the acting. Because a lot of people say this about Arnold Schwarzenegger, as if he's just like this doofus who can't really act. He's just going through his lines just because of his accent is really thick, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he is a really good actor. Because if you see the way he turns his body, the way he responds to, not just in that, in Predator, in any of his films, just because he's big and kind of hulking as a man, it doesn't mean that he can't act. He's acting with his body, he's acting with his eyes, you know, absolutely. Everything. And everyone else is the same thing. And just the way they interact with their environment. Love it.
Yep.
You know, you can't tell me that they weren't actually in the jungle and wherever they were. And all everything about it. There was this particular scene when one of their comrades is, he's taken down, the thing comes in his chest.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's blown in the chest with a predator.
Yep.
And then, what's his name again?
Blaine.
Bill Duke's character.
Bill Duke.
That's
Bill Duke was Mac. And then Blaine, his chest exploded. That was Jesse Ventura, who had the big minigun. Yep.
Okay, yeah. And then he started just tearing up the whole place with this thing.
That's a great scene.
Big, I don't know what it was. I was like, what is that? What's inside that? Did it take out of a jet? My brother and I would say, well, that came out of a jet for sure, because it's making all this and just tore down. And the terror in his eyes.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, it's like, okay, these guys can really act. So you know, nowadays when you see, like, on places like Reddit, people are saying, oh, that's such a cheesy movie. I don't really see what the appeal is with it and that type of thing. But what are you missing, guys? Exactly. Come on.
Exactly.
This is it's masterfully done.
It is.
Masterfully done. I think
in every way.
The same director also did Die Hard, if I'm not mistaken, John McTiernan.
Yes, John McTiernan. Yeah. Yeah.
Great. Yeah. Director. And
Yeah,
he's excellent at just creating all of this, like you said, suspense and tension, and just kind of pulling you along, but also giving you such a ride of emotions that you feel a whole gamut. By the time the movie's over, you're relieved too that he's alive.
Yeah, like, absolutely. You know,
if I'm giving it away and I'm spoiling anything, I'm sorry, but yeah.
That's okay.
It's been around a while.
We do spoilers on this show. We'll assume people watching this have seen Predator. Even you know, if you know the plot before you've seen it, which is, it's hard not to have anything spoiled these days with the internet. So I do feel sorry for the younger generation who having all these films ruined for them because they're seeing the memes or the clips on YouTube before they've even seen the movie. But that's okay. You know, we can have a few spoilers.
It's been around a while, guys.
Well, it has. It's like nearly 40 years old. So. Yeah. Yeah, it's nearly a 4-year-old film. And you mentioned the sequels, which, you know, sort of were up and down. But, yeah, Prey was great. You know, that was a real return to the Predator form. And I believe there's a couple of more films like that in the works where it's set in historical times and pitting the Predator against different people in history, so that should be interesting. I do have to ask quickly, did you ever check out the Alien versus Predator spin-off films? Did you get into those at
I
all?
saw the one with Sanaa Lathan, that Alien versus Predator, the first one they did.
Oh, yep, in the in where they're in
I enjoyed
Antarctica and
that
all
one.
that.
That one is my favorite one,
Yeah,
the
it's
Alien
pretty
versus
good.
Predator. And I don't know if they did after that one because I was like, there's so many things coming at you at once. But that one with when they first made that kind of alliance, like enemy of my enemy is my friend. I was like, oh, this is the stuff.
It was
You
good.
know,
It was,
and
yeah.
then the Predator, what he I don't know if you've seen it. Did you see that one?
Which one?
The original Alien versus Predator.
Yes, I've seen them all. Yep.
Yeah, well, when he kind of made the weapons out of the alien's body, like
Yeah, that's right.
he cut at his head and used it as a shield, and you know, and poured his something in there, ugh, and made it stick, and he just made like a shield and a sword for her,
That's
and then
right.
he marked at the end of it. I just love that one a
Yeah, it
lot.
was actually really well done. It's better than it could have been. It could have been a disaster, but the Alien versus Predator was quite good, I thought. It was quite well
I
done.
enjoyed that. I have my own copy of that one because I loved it so much. Not
Yeah.
as much as the original. The original
You
is
can't
gonna
beat
always
it.
have a special place in my heart. Nothing is irreplaceable, but that one is my second favorite, and then Prey.
Yeah, and then Prey.
So.
Fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. And this, I guess the Predator character himself is so iconic, you know, and like, even though he's essentially there to just kill any moving, living thing, in a way, we're
Yes.
still kind of rooting for the Predator in a funny way, I find.
Yeah.
Like, because he's just such an ingenious character, and there's so much
So I'm
richness
looking for
to,
my sketch I have of the pre that I
yeah, there's
did
so
of
much
the
richness to
Predator.
his character. Yeah.
Yeah, I did this sketch. I don't know if you can see
Oh,
it.
that's awesome.
This
Very cool. Very cool.
is head. I used just pen and markers for this one.
Amazing. Really cool. Yeah, I just have to mention quickly, I've got a good friend of mine, Stephen, who is a really creative with making things with his hands. And years ago, we were having costume parties for all of our birthday parties. And my 30th was coming up, and it was a movie-themed costume party. And he got to work and he started making a Predator costume, and he spent months on this,
Neat.
and he didn't quite have it ready in time for my 30th. His backup was Edward Scissorhands, which was even brilliant as well. And I'll share the pictures here on the
Nice.
screen. And then when
Neat.
his 30th came around the following March, he finally had his Predator costume ready. And it was like watching the Predator walk out of the movie. It was so detailed, like just
My
incredible.
goodness.
Give little shout out to Stephen and his Predator costume.
Yeah,
But yeah,
absolutely.
it's such an
Awesome.
iconic character. Like, we can all, you know, we can all find something appealing about it, like the mythos and the mystery of it, and just the fact that
Yes.
he's very, like, the Predator has his principles, doesn't he? And he's like, I'm here to kill, and I hunt. It's only like for sport, for hunting. I'm only going to go after people who I
Yes.
think are a good challenge or a good adversary or have a weapon. But the Predator also knows that when he's cornered, when he's defeated, he'll sacrifice himself. He's like, all right, I'm done. Without giving it a second thought, you know, and this happens in most of the
Yes.
movies. And I think that's what makes him such a compelling character. Yeah. Do you have
Yeah, I
anything to
think
add
for
on that?
me, yeah, of course. For me, what I find compelling about it is what, like with the studios and the creators haven't done, I'll say focus on what they haven't done was exploit him to such a state that it takes away his mysticism and because for me, they haven't exposed that much where it's okay, well, he's okay, well, I know everything about like how they'll take a character and kind of bleed him dry. They haven't done that with the Predator. There's some things that have been explained, but not everything. And even in terms of like the detailing of having him strip naked, because sometimes they'll do that, and so it takes away everything. Okay, well, this is, I don't know. I mean, I still find him fascinating. You know,
He's
it's not like you know everything about there is no, so there is a lot more to be explored
absolutely, yeah.
about the Predator and about even his home country, wherever that may be,
Yeah,
his
his
home
home world.
planet.
Yeah, you see glimpses of
His
it in some of
country
the
in the
other
sky.
movies. Yeah, you do see glimpses of it, and I follow a couple of Predator fan pages on Facebook, and all these people are saying, We want to see a female predator. We want to see a young predator learning how to fight. We want to see a film set on the predator's world where they fight another alien race that's similar to them. So it's like, yeah, okay, maybe that could work. But I guess in today's movies, like, filmmakers are very tempted to explain everything and go back and look at all this backstory just for the sake of making new content. But it's like the Predator is so appealing, like you said, because he's mysterious. Mm-hmm. Like, hopefully they don't touch it too much, but, you know, we'll see, you know.
Yeah. I don't want them to touch it. I don't want you to see everything there is in their language and keep some mystery about him, you know, just because that's what makes him unique. Absolutely. Don't take that thing away and just kind of milk it to the end.
Yeah, that's right. We don't need a Predator sitcom with, like, Predator going to high school and all of this kind of stuff, right? don't write it off, though. Like, someone's probably developing that script right now. You know, Predator the early years or something like that. It's like, no.
So I think there's a lot to be explored without the exploitation of Predator. They're just in terms of like the creativity, they can find another approach, another perspective to explore maybe something else. If they don't want to go into him and his mythos, they can go into maybe his home world and explain something more about that and say where that is precisely, or I don't know. But I just wanted to leave him alone.
leave him be. Don't rattle the hornet's nest, as they say, because you'll piss off the hornet. The predator will come after you. So.
I wouldn't mind seeing is if they were to do a sequel that revisited, like, Arnold going back to somehow going back there.
Yep.
And it's just with him, you know, being aged the way he is.
Yeah.
And visiting and maybe having lost all the men, but something happening there, like them having some event.
Yeah. Maybe he goes back for the anniversary, like a memorial or something.
Yeah. And then he meets a relative or a son of that particular predator or some vengeful a relative. I don't know. I don't know. They could do something where they can bring him back and find something interesting to say.
They could.
I'd watch it.
Yeah, absolutely. I've heard rumors of something like that in the wind as well. So we'll see. But just coming back to, you know, your point, the film everyone must see is The Predator, you know, because it's exciting, it's thrilling, you know, it puts you right in the thick of the jungle, like you can feel the heat, you know, you can see the sweat, and it's like, there's that feeling of kind of claustrophobia, that impending doom, that something.
Let Billy still be alive. That's a good story.
Yeah.
Because we assume that Billy is dead, but if that actor is still alive, that Billy would have still been alive and might have encountered a different predator or something. I don't know. You think of something.
So many potential ideas that it could go in. So,
yeah.
Yeah, well, it's so good to have Predator on the podcast now. And we've had a couple of the Alien films, Alien and Aliens. So, you know, if anyone's watching or listening, if they want to add to the list and, you know, maybe at some point we'll do an Aliens versus Predator crossover podcast episode or something. So we'll see how we go.
Yeah, that sounds like fun.
Awesome. All right, well, we might move on to your next film, if that's okay, PT. And,
that's perfectly fine.
We're exploring another monster of sorts, and this is the film that you told me changed your life in multiple different ways. Another iconic character that people are going to know straight away. So, yeah, I'll let you introduce this film to us. What are we going to talk about?
Wes Craven's A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Ooh, okay.
Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
No! No!
She's the only one who can stop it. If she fails...
I'm your boyfriend now, Nancy.
No one will survive.
Help me!
Wes Craven, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Bad dreams may follow this podcast, people, just letting you know.
Oh, yes. Awesome. One, two, the original. Freddy's coming for you.
Yeah. awesome. One of the scariest movies ever. Oh, just another genius creation of cinema, Freddy Krueger. Yeah. So why Freddy Krueger? Why is this the film that, the character, the original? How did this change your life? Tell us all about it.
Well, he's terrifying.
Yes.
To
Tick.
have a character, well, I won't say a character, have a thing, an entity that can come into your dream, infiltrate your dream, and kill you in your dream is terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
And I was very young when I'd seen it for the first time. And when I saw it, I was actually tr so traumatized until I was almost in a trance because I couldn't believe that I'd seen something so scary happen. I was in shock.
Yep.
There was this particular scene with Tina. You know that one?
Yes,
And
poor
it's
Tina.
pretty gory. I won't go into the details of what happened to Tina, but I couldn't believe I was seeing on screen.
Yeah.
And just all of the blood and gore, the music that led up to that, there's this, and then this character, he's really ugly, you
He
know, because
sure is.
he's burnt so badly, and then he's so evil. And then he has these this hand with these long, basically knives for nails, and they're sharp as hell, and he's ready to use them to kill. And so it's and he's this dirty sweater and the sinister eyes. It's just, my goodness, what are
Again.
you gonna do about that? How can you, what can you do with this guy? He's in your dreams and he looks like that, and he's coming for you.
In your dreams. Yeah, I
And you're a
know.
kid, and they're like, okay, so as soon as the lights go out. And you don't want to fall asleep because you don't, when you're a kid, you don't know the difference between reality and fantasy. They kind of blur when you're between sleep and wake. And when nighttime comes and the movie's over and everybody's asleep and you're like, okay, well, I don't know, I'm gonna go to sleep. And so
Yeah.
it was terrifying for me.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'd say that was the downside, being terrified, but being so compelled to want to see it the next day. So I'd watch it in the daytime. All this happened like during a summer when I was a kid, watching the day, and then nighttime was when I was terrified
Of
when
course.
it got dark.
That's it. In the dark and
So I
alone
was
with your
really, really
imagination.
brave,
Oh, yeah.
really brave in the daytime, and then nighttime was another story. But there's something that kept drawing me to the film, and it was because some parts of it is pretty comical, you know. The dialogue, this character, he's evil, but then he has this again, pretty funny way about him. The things he's saying, and he's kind of playing with them and teasing and taunting. But Robert Englund's the genius, so I'll say,
Fantastic. Yeah.
because
Perfect casting. Perfect casting.
what he does with his eyes when he's looking and when he's calling, But I'd say this about the way it's changed me was it desensitized me to such an extent that I could watch anything after that. Movies that I wouldn't have been able to see before, it's like, Child's Play. No pun intended, because I was able to watch Child's Play, no problem after that. All the Hellraiser films, Michael Myers Go to Town, Jason, what's that? You know, Jason and of the, Friday the 13th films,
Yeah, they're not
anything
really
else?
scary, no.
No. And so I was able to watch pretty much any horror film and enjoy them and see them for what they were. And because nothing could compare to Night
No.
Nightmare to me.
No, it's like the
And
roller coaster of horror movies. Like if you're scared of rides, do the biggest, fastest roller coaster you can, and then everything else will be fine. So yeah, that's kind of how I see it, is like if you can get through that and emerge not too traumatized, then you can watch any horror film. And definitely for me, it opened me up to horror films, because I was too young to see it as a kid. I was only maybe about two when it came out. But I remember being in primary school, and all the kids at primary school were talking about the Freddy Krueger films. And I obviously wasn't allowed to watch them until I was old enough to go to the video store and rent them for myself. And I watched the first one, and I'm like, I'm hooked. And I worked my way through all the sequels, and then it was all the Halloweens and all the Friday the 13th. And then horror slasher films came back in the 90s and early 2000s. I'm like, great, all these characters I've been watching are coming back. Freddy versus Jason and Scream, and then they redid Halloween. I'm like, beautiful, I'm ready, let's go, But it all started in a lot of ways with the original Nightmare on Elm Street, didn't it?
Yes. Yeah, I did. And And like I said, everything, but Wes Craven, it was well written.
Very well written, yeah.
But of course, like I said, with an audience watching it today, they probably wouldn't find it as scary as I did back then.
Yeah.
But because I watched it I don't know how long after it was out, for a while, when I had seen it and then I saw it on VHS. I don't know, VHS isn't a thing now, but it was a thing for us back then. We had no choice. And yeah, so I saw it a number of times. I'd say I'd seen it perhaps 100 more times, 150 times
Wow.
at least,
Yeah, amazing.
almost daily. I was watching that sometimes twice a day. It
Yep.
was crazy, because
Yeah.
then I started to memorize the parts. But then, there were things to learn about Freddy too.
Yes.
Because this is the conundrum I have. Freddy, it seems like he won, but at the same time he didn't. It was kind of ambiguous, the ending, for me. And that's what kind of, I'm not sure, I'm kind of on the fence with that, because even with reading the screenplay, it's hard to tell whether it was a dream sequence or if it was reality. And so I don't mind them doing that sometimes in films, but sometimes I would like to know, please. Like in Incep at the end of Inception, just some films, this is an ambiguous ending. Okay, we don't know if it's if the totem fell or not.
Right.
And with that last sequence, I don't think I'm spoiling it for anyone, where Freddy kind of is like this dreamy, everyone's in the car and everyone's alive. And then Freddie grabs the mom through the door and kind of pulls her. And I was like, what the hell's happening here?
Yeah. Is he dead? Is he
Because
back? Did she die? Is it?
he's supposed to be dead. Yeah. Nancy was supposed to have killed him. And yeah, so that part of it, I won't say it disturbs me, but I'm still thinking about it now. It's like, what really happened? It's never explained, and no one ever says anything.
No, and it just ends and it leaves you
None of the
like
cast, the
thinking.
crew, no one.
No. And I guess the ending is the perfect setup for a sequel. And the sequels came as a tidal wave throughout the 80s and early 90s.
Yeah, but the sequels came, but then that's never explained. That's what I'm
No.
saying.
No, it's
That,
like
okay,
individual
did
stories, isn't it?
Nancy and everyone make it out alive or not? All the
And see
friends,
her show
Glenn, because
up and
Glenn went
part.
down.
Yeah. And then
Just
she
what
shows up in
happened
the
to
third
Glenn?
one. And then yeah, it's like the final showdown. So just on the sequels, how did you find the sequels? Do you like them? Do you watch any of them?
I saw one at the theater, and that was in 3D, and I think that was Freddy Part
Yep.
6.
Yep, Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare. Yep. So just as you were mentioning Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare, I've mentioned this a couple of times on my podcast when we've gotten onto the topic of VHS tapes, but I found this several years ago.
Oh,
It's a VHS tape of
neat.
Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare.
Oh, neat.
All right, rest in peace, Freddy Krueger, 1984 to 1992. And then you
Wow.
open it, and there's the cover, and it's got the claw marks in the cover. So really cool. So I'm hanging on to
That
this. You
is
know,
cool.
they've saved
You
the best for
should.
last. So yeah, I'm not sure if it still works, but I'll have to play it. But that's my little tribute to
Yeah.
Freddy. And then on the shelf behind me, it's usually just behind that little yellow box there, if I can point to it, is a 3D poster of the original film with Nancy lying in the bed
Sweet.
and Freddy's claws coming out of the wall, which is like the cover of the poster for the original film. So bought
Yeah.
this maybe 20 years ago. So
It's
prior
in
to
good
the
condition.
remake and prior to all of that, and it's never come out of the box. So again, just my sort of little collection of Freddy Krueger stuff. I'll
Oh,
be hanging
that's
on to that.
neat.
So yeah. And
I
you've
collect
got some
stuff
cute
too, so
stuff.
I really find that I find that to be admirable. Two thumbs up for you. It's
Thank you.
great.
Thank you. It's my little
Love it.
collection. Yeah. How about
That is
yourself? Do you
neat.
have
I
any
have a Freddy toy
memorabilia or anything?
somewhere,
Yeah.
but I wasn't able to find it for the time. But I have a
That's
little
okay. No
wobbly
worries.
something with Freddy.
Cool.
Yeah.
All good. Well, if you've got a picture of
So
it, we can
fun.
add it to the video and we can pop the picture up on the
Yeah,
screen or something.
I did a I started to do some art with Freddy, but
Yep.
It's just like a shadow of him. Can you see it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's cool.
He would be that one there.
Oh, yeah, I see it. Like, oh, and you've got Jigsaw up there. You've got Marvin the Martian.
Yeah, that's supposed to be Chucky, but I never got to finish him. That's Michael Myers.
Very cool.
Marvin the Martian, and then that's Jigsaw over there.
Very cool.
Yeah, I was supposed to complete it for Halloween, but never got around to it. So sorry about the noise, guys. Just rolling this up.
Love it. Very cool.
This is on canvas.
Awesome.
I'll stretch it and put it on the frame whenever I'm done with it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So I have to ask, did watching the original Nightmare on the Street film, did you ever have dreams about Freddy, or do you have dreams about Freddy to this day?
Not anymore, but I did.
Yep.
A couple of times. I had a dream where I was wearing a sweater and he wanted it back. And I was like, oh my God, how the hell did I get this? And I was terrified. It's like in the dream, I could smell it and everything. I was watching it a little bit too much, probably what really happened. But I was wearing a sweater, and he's like, you have my sweater, and I'm going to get it back. And I was like, oh my God. And so like, when I woke up, I was, you know, yanking at myself and looking to see if I woke up with the sweater. One of those things. So I have dreamt about him.
Absolutely. I have. It's hard not to dream anymore. About him, you know? He works your way into your brain, and he never leaves. You know, he's always there. Such an iconic character. And I guess with the sequels, the first two were pretty dark and scary. And then they kind of got a little more comical because the films became about Freddy, not so much about the boy or girl in danger, but it was like people went back to the sequels to see Freddy. So it was like he became almost like a celebrity in a lot of ways.
Yes. It was a nightmare. It was just Freddy part one. Freddy part two, three, four, five, six. Mm. And then he did one with Jason, right?
Freddy versus Jason. Yep. Yes. And then there was the remake in 2010. Yeah. Did you see the remake?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, you can probably skip it. It's not much to really, you know, write home about. So yeah.
Stick the one with the original. They did. Freddy and Jason was pretty good.
Yeah, that was fun.
I think Freddy was supposed to be kind of the good guy, sort of.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So that's what made it fun. Yes, to kill Jason, because I don't really like Jason. I'm not a Jason fan. I'm a Michael Myers fan.
Mm-hmm.
If I would, you know, if anyone in a mask, I prefer Michael Myers.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. A bit more depth
and
to
not
his
the new
character.
Halloween,
yeah.
The old Halloween.
Jason's basically just a zombie who walks around with a machete, so there's not much going on there, but but yeah, they're just fun sort of hack 'em up kind of movies. But yeah, I guess, you know, they all sort of, these characters all sort of came out around the same time. You know, you've got your Freddy, Jason, Michael Myers, Pinhead from Hellraiser. You know, there's a few others there, but I think Freddy is the king. You know, I think he's sort of sits at the top, and every other slasher character is like really pales in comparison because there's just so much potential with Freddy's character, I think. And the fact that, like, you can't, if you go to sleep, he can kill you, but you try and stay awake, and you can only stay awake for so long. So eventually you're going to have to go back to sleep and face him, you know, which is what these characters do. So it's such a clever idea, you know, from the brain of Wes Craven, who also created the Scream franchise as well. And, well, he directed Scream. So, like, yeah, he's been behind the camera on a lot of iconic horror movies. And then sadly passed away in 2014,
wardrobe,
I think it was.
His wardrobe is iconic as well. I mean, he has the hat, the little dusty hat, and the sweater, of course.
Yep.
And then the nails and the well, the burnt skin. It's not, you know.
Things.
And then, he's a character. Of course, his character is, he is a character all by
he's
himself.
A character, 100%. So, yeah.
And very terrifying.
And do you have a favorite scene from the original film? Like, which one stands out the most for you as the scariest scene or the most Freddy of all the scenes?
I'd say a scene that I found to be the most disturbing was the Glenn scene.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was kind of attacked. The first time I had seen, of course, that's Johnny Depp, and he was really young and he was really cute. And I was like, kind of attached to him because he was a sweet character.
Mm.
And there was nothing left of him. And so I was like, oh my God, it took me a while to get over that.
Yeah, that's first horrific. That is one of the most horrific deaths in movies ever, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's not a favorite scene. That's the most traumatizing scene that it started with Tina, but it went to another level with Glenn.
Mm.
For one of the favorites, I'd say favorite sequences I see was when Nancy was preparing all of her like a booby traps and stuff for him.
Yep. She went a bit home alone on his ass, didn't she?
I enjoyed that. And then when she planned it out, and then she caught a hold of him, and she was like a step ahead. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that sequence where it seems like she was winning for a change.
Yeah.
But so that would lead to the ending that was ambiguous that I kind of pissed me off. But
that's it. Yeah.
But those sequence and scenes with her preparing the booby trap and taking, I think she was drinking a lot of coffee and then she actually got him out. She had everything planned, and she the alarm woke her up.
Yep.
And so all of that, and then she finally got him out.
Yeah.
And she said, you can't kill me, or something like that. I can't remember what she said just right now. And so he starts like disappear or something.
That's right.
Because he didn't have, she wasn't afraid of him anymore.
No, that's right. That's right. Yeah, she said, you're nothing. Yeah, you're in the real world. You're nothing. And then he just kind of, disappears. But I mean, how many times has Freddy died and come back? So I think like as the films progress, they figure out all these different ways to kill him, and he just keeps coming back. Because he's already dead, you know. He's essentially, you know, like a demon. And in Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare, the film I just showed you the VHS for, you find a bit more about how he became Freddy and where his power comes from and all of that. And then, just quickly, if we can chat about Wes Craven's new Nightmare, where it's Heather Langenkamp playing herself, right? And Freddy comes out of the movies. What did you think of that one?
Not a fan.
Okay.
Not too much of a fan of that one. I don't know. There are very few sequels or remakes or whatever that reimaginings that kind of live up to an original. And that's just how I felt about all of everything else that came after Freddy, except for, like I said, part 6, because I'd seen that and that was in 3D, and it sort of gave things a different dimension, if you will, just to see him in the theater for the first time.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was the first time I'd seen him in the theater, and then it was in 3D, and so I really enjoyed that, but everything else is, doesn't compare.
No, definitely not. Yeah. All right, well, yeah, Freddy Krueger. So anyone who hasn't seen it, watch it. You will probably have dreams and nightmares about him. And one of the most iconic horror film characters ever. And, you know, I don't think we've seen the end of Freddy. I think he'll come back in some form or fashion. You know, like with Predator, there's just so many different ways you can explore the character and that world. Yeah. So we'll see.
I want to see something different and interesting with Freddy. Freddy versus this one, Freddy versus the other one. I don't know if they can make it any scarier than it was the first time around, though.
No.
I seriously doubt it.
No,
it's already been done.
Yeah, for sure. Because like the first film obviously introduced him, and you didn't know much about him and what was going to happen. And then the first film created all the rules. It created the universe for Freddy Krueger to come from and all that. So it sort of set the rules for all the sequels. So I guess they became less scarier. But yeah, it's like the first one is always going to be the scariest, like the original Scream, the original Exorcist, the first Halloween. They're always the originals are always the best. Yeah,
like The Ring. Pretty spooky. Yeah.
Traumatizing.
You know? So all that is. It is. So the creativity is still there, and you know, those horror buffs, they're always looking for the next best thing, the next Blair Witch project or whatever.
Yep.
And I think with Freddy, I'm glad he's living on and he hasn't died. And so they're trying to find ways to keep him alive, and that's I'm okay with that.
Yeah,
you know, I just don't want them to again dilute him too much.
Yeah,
to the point where it's like, okay, they're just gonna milk this thing for money.
Yeah,
but it happens anyway, because this is a business. Hollywood is a business. So
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. All right, so great chat so far, PT, about Alien Predator and Freddy the Nightmare Stalker. And we're going to put the monsters away now, so it's okay. I think we've traumatized our listeners enough. And for something a little lighter and friendlier now, this is your all-time favorite movie, another classic, iconic cinema character. So, yeah, please tell us, what is this movie we're going to talk about next?
Steven Spielberg's E.T. the Extraterrestrial.
Awesome. The full title, E.T. the Extraterrestrial. Absolutely.
We will witness the arrival, the search, the desertion, the fear, the discovery, the friendship.
I'm keeping him.
The secret, the love, the warning, the signal, the mystery, the danger, the intrusion, the wonderment, the enchantment, the hope. The connection has been made. Universal Pictures presents Steven Spielberg's E.T. the Extraterrestrial.
E.T. Oh, good old E.T.
Well, actually, E.T. is tied for two other films, but ooh, I can only speak about one of them. Yes.
Yeah, it's a Empire hard choice. Back. Yeah. It's a hard
The Empire Strikes Back, and Oliver the Musical.
Ah, so, right. Yes, excellent.
But E.T. reigns supreme. So,
yeah, it's hard not to like him, isn't it? Yeah. So, yes. had the title of the highest grossing film of all time after it came out, like, you know, made almost $1 billion in the early 80s.
Wow, I'm surprised.
Which is incredible, and yeah. Everyone knows E.T. Every kid and everyone in our generation knew E.T. growing up as a kid. So, you know, where and how did E.T. come into your life, and you know, why has it become your favorite film of all time?
E.T. came into my life as a child. Again, the VHS.
Yep.
If you've listened to any of the other segments, then you would know that VHS was the thing.
Absolutely.
And I fell in love the first time I saw it. I was taken on such a emotional roller coaster ride. I got so attached to the characters, to Elliot, to E.T. He felt like he was leaving me at the end, not leaving Elliot.
He left so, almost, didn't he? Yeah.
Yes, and so I felt so attached to him, and yeah, so that feeling's never left. It was just the way that story is written. It's magical, you know, the way it's written.
Yep.
The story itself, the movie, has its own beating heart, just like E.T.'s red heart.
Yep.
The movie itself has its own beating heart. And yeah, you feel really that from the very beginning when E.T., there was the spaceship comes down, just the music and just the feeling of the whole ambiance of that film is just very captivating, and it really draws you in, doesn't it?
Yeah,
very emotionally. The way John Williams even uses the music, he's a genius.
Oh, absolutely!
And he uses
unparalleled.
He composes in a way where his music itself gives its own narrative and adds another layer to whatever's happening visually, and I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Drawn in from the first frame, I'd say from the first frame of, I was hooked.
Yeah. It just hooks you in straight away. And I think what it does so well, and what Spielberg does so well, is he understands kids, you know, and he's always had that as a director, that sense of childhood awe and wonder, that he's really just a big kid playing around with cameras, you know, and he's brought us these incredible films that, you know, that get us to be like, wow, what am I seeing on screen? This is incredible.
Yes.
You know, and one of the techniques he used in that film was all of the cameras were all at the level of the kids' point of view. So they're always looking up to the adults and looking up at things. And so if you watch it, and I know you like to watch movies with the sound off, and you've probably noticed this. If you watch it, you'll notice the camera is at the level of the kids. So it's like it focuses on the kids and the kids' point of view. And there's very few films, I think, out there that appeal to everybody that focus on children, You know, there's kids movies made for kids and families, but like it's very hard, I think, to make a good movie about kids that kids, teens, adults, and elderly people will watch. And I think E.T. really pioneered that.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, the casting is amazing. All of the children, Elliot, and what's the daughter's name?
Gertie,
Gertie? What? Gertie,
little Drew Barrymore.
Michael. Yes. Yeah, Michael. All of them, I kind of like projected myself into the characters, especially Elliot, because when I saw it for the first time, I was his age. And so I was kind of living life vicariously through him. And as he was going through the scenes, I felt like I was going through the things that he was going through. So yeah, he's a really good actor, a child actor,
Oh, he
and
was fantastic.
so the casting was superb.
It really was. Yeah, definitely.
I
Like
can't picture
you.
anybody else in any of those characters.
No, definitely not. Another thing Spielberg does really well is cast his characters for sure. Yeah, and like you, Elliot, you just sympathize with Elliot straight away. You know, like he's a young kid, but he seems really mature and wise beyond his years because of what's happened. You know, the family breakdown, dad's not on the scene, and you know, he's sort of had to step up in a lot of ways. But he's kind of like the boy who cried wolf. You know, he doesn't really, no one really listens to him, believes him. He doesn't get a lot of attention. You know, and eventually he's the one that E.T. first meets, and he's like, okay, I'm gonna, you know, take you into my care because I'm curious, I'm interested. Who are you? Where do you come from? And then they form this relationship, and I think it's the relationship between Elliot and E.T. is beautiful, and it's what is so special about this film. Yeah, can you comment a little bit on their relationship and what that's all about?
Yes, I definitely sympathized with Elliot and his as being a middle child. I'm an older child, but he's a middle child in the film. And it seemed like all the children were dealing with the parents' divorce differently. And I think, yeah, so he seemed like there was a disconnection between he and his older brother and his sister. He was like almost like a loner, even though he had siblings, and looking for acceptance, because it seemed like his older brother had his friends, and his younger sister was too young, and so he was alone. And I know that feeling as an older child, having younger siblings, that it seemed like you were kind of disconnected in a way. And so I kind of for me, yeah, that resonated, having an imaginary friend or just wanting to connect with somebody who would understand you on that level, that you had your own private Idaho. Anyway, I'm quoting other films, but yeah, you
Good
can have
movie.
your own connection that's unique to you. He had someone there, and yeah, that part resonated with me, that he had, and I was happy that he was able to have something that was different. He didn't feel as lonely with ET. Yeah, that part was taken care of.
Definitely. Yeah. That's right. He was a kid who was really alone, and you know, he was dealing with a lot and very much a kid that lived in his own head, you know, and had to learn how to entertain himself and look after himself, because he's got this younger sister who's only like 5 or 6 years old, and this older brother who, let's face it, Michael's just a bit of a jerk. He's a bit of a clown, just mucking around with his buddies, you know, and they're always giving Elliot a hard time until towards the end, when you know the government are after them and shit gets real, and it's like Elliot gives them orders and they're like, right, done, you know, and they jump on the bikes, and yeah, it's fantastic. So just curious to hear your thoughts about, I guess, this how this film explores the relationship between children and adults, and how the adult world tries to invade on what's going on and sort of take that away, and all of that. Can you speak a little bit about that, how it portrays it, and you know, ultimately the kids come out as the victors. So yeah, what were your thoughts around that sort of focus on the movie between the kids and the grown-ups?
As an adult, I was able to see things from the mother's perspective. I didn't really care about her watching for the first time, and so that dynamic, it was just like non-existent. And so watching it as an adult is different from watching it as a kid. I don't know if you had that experience where you could see the disparity in how you would experience the storytelling. I'm not sure, but for me, I experienced it differently. As a child, when I was watching it, I saw everything from the kid's perspective, obviously. And then as an adult, like with the question you're asking, I would not have been able to parse that as a child, right? But
No.
now, in retrospect,
Yeah.
I can go back and I can say, okay, the relationships between, it seemed like there was definitely, I won't say a disconnect, but it seemed like they were dismissive of these children, and they're
Correct.
just everyone for themselves, and want everyone just kind of they had their own agendas and wanting to fulfill those things. And I don't know, the children were an afterthought sometimes, it seemed like they
Good
couldn't
point.
understand. And these kids are brilliant, and not to be dismissed, but they were dismissed. It's like the was it the doctor and Elliot? Was he doctor? Was he NASA? I can't remember if he was a doctor or from NASA.
Yeah, the
The
man I
guy.
think who's just called Keys because he's always got the set of keys hanging from his belt, played by Peter Coyote, is and he's the one who's trying to help Elliot and ET, and but you're not really sure is he really want to help or does he want to try and take ET away and
I
study
didn't
it?
like him. I didn't like him as a child or an adult. I
He's a
didn't,
company
because
man, wasn't he? He was a company man.
He didn't seem very compassionate towards Elliot and what he experienced. Oh, he came for all of us. No, he didn't.
No, not at all.
To me, it seemed like the, I don't know if it was intentional in the writing for there to I guess it would have been realistic, because but at the same time, it's giving two perspectives, one from the children's perspective, and then the other one from the parents or the adults' vantage point. And that was interesting because it will appeal to different audience, like you said, a wider audience, they'll view it differently.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I yeah so
In a lot of ways, it portrays grown-ups as the bad guys in this film because obviously ET is not a villain. He's the cutest, sweetest alien in the world, and he's got a heart of gold and well, a luminescent
yes
heart to be more specific.
yes
And the grown-ups are like the bad guys, right? So I think from a filmmaking point of view, that was so noble for Steven Spielberg to say, "I'm a grown-up with all this power, and I can make any movie I want to, but I'm going to make a movie about kids and focus on the struggles of kids, which are real." You know, grown-ups might not think, "Oh, there's ET now," but the grown-ups might not think, you know, the kids' stresses mean anything, but they do, you know, and the kids fight back. And I think for any filmmaker who likes to tackle that and say, like, yeah, adults and grown-ups can be greedy, opportunistic a-holes, kids are innocent and pure and full of love and goodness, and that's what the film shows. And that's, you know, I guess why ET is there really is just to spread the love, you know? Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the man of the hour, ET. So you've just shown us your little, you know, figurine there, and they were obviously have been popular for over 40 years now, hanging from, you know, stuck on the inside of car windows and as cuddly teddy bears and that kind of thing. Yeah. What is it about
This one's
ET
from
that?
Universal Studios. I saw got it years ago. I kept the tag.
It's
So,
very cute. Yeah.
yeah,
What
he's
is it about
wearing
ET? Why do
Elliot's.
we love him so much?
Well, these big, beautiful eyes. Look at them.
The eyes, yeah.
And because of just the way he's kind of magical, because he has powers, he can heal. He does look a little creepy, but
Yeah, a
his
little
feet are weird, right? And he's
bit.
slushy. Like, I think Michael described him as being slushy. Oh, he's just one of those slushy guys. I think it's the heart of ET. We can tell that he had good intentions, that he, and then in a sense, he's going through a similar situation that like Elliot. He's missing his family, he's missing something, and he's longing to be somewhere and to be accepted. And and I think his vulnerability is what, I think it makes him relatable, because you can he's not like this all powerful, all godlike creature.
No,
He
he's
has vulnerabilities. When he was sick, we can see that. Oh, he can die, he can
Yeah,
get
he's very
sick, he's
fragile,
not.
yeah.
And and he's away from his home world, so you're kind of endeared to him. Like he's alone, like when you find a puppy or something that needs coddling and shelter and care, you know, with the Reese's Pieces, which is one of my favorite scenes. And people say, okay, well, why is that your favorite scene? It's an odd one to be a favorite scene. I said, because of the suspense in that scene. You don't know what's going to happen. Like the first time I'd seen it, they hadn't, well, there was a flash of him, like in the very beginning, there's a flash of him in the woods, but you didn't know really what he was. And
No,
so when
definitely
Elliot's
not.
kind of putting down the Reese's Pieces, and then he out there in the woods, and there's like all of this like lead up. And so there was the suspense. And so eventually they ended up in his yard. And then he has all the Reese's, and then he's waiting out there, and he's sitting out there and at night. And Steven Spielberg, I'm telling you, he's a genius, he's a
He really
master.
is.
But yeah, and so the shots with the view of that shed, wherever he was in there, and the music and the suspense, and he's looking, and then suddenly something jumps. So all of the suspense in that scene, then he finally starts to come. So we're able to see him for the first time. He's like exposed as to what is this creature, how does he look, and the fingers, and you see so much of him. Not so much, but enough to know that, okay, this isn't something to be afraid of. This
No.
is, yeah. Yeah,
That's right.
he's vulnerable. He needs something. He's obviously he can eat, so he doesn't look like he's gonna eat anyone. There's nothing to fear. Yeah,
That's it.
that's one of my favorite scenes is that. Is the Reese's, not the flying with the bicycle scene, but the Reese's scene.
Absolutely. And so many iconic scenes. And it's, yeah, that's the thing about this podcast is like you know, everyone has a different interpretation of, you know, of the one film. So yeah, it's great to hear your take on it. And obviously you've explained the ET character so well, and the journey of Elliot and their relationship. And it's just a beautiful film, and there's a reason it's one of the most popular movies of all time. You know, it gets past your defenses, and you laugh and you cry and you cheer, and it's we can all relate to it,
I
you know,
wanted to
growing
get the
up in
batteries working on
suburbia.
this. I wanted to get the batteries to work on this,
Oh,
but
that's
I
cool.
couldn't find the batteries in time
Oh, no,
because I
no.
wanted to kind of
That's awesome.
he used this speak and spell as a part of his paraphernalia
That's right.
for his communication back to his home planet.
To phone home.
And
Yeah, that's right. Because he just wants to get home.
And
That's really cool.
he is a, but he but HT was brilliant because the first time I'd seen it, and he was gathering these things, and he had the blender, and he put everything like on this blanket, and he was dragging around. I said, what is he doing? And he created like a communication center basically with the umbrella and all these parts, and I think something was scraping the saw, a part of a saw or something, saw blade. And yeah, so I said, okay, yeah, he's a, well, he was a scientist, so he would know how to do something like that. And then when he had seen the comic, it said, E.T., you want a phone home, you want to call somebody? Of course. And he figured it out. And yeah, he was a layered character, not just like this alien with the powers to heal. He was brilliant. I think people forget that part about him as well. I just wanted to mention that because he deserves to
Absolutely.
be lauded.
Yeah,
Hello.
he's like a little professor, isn't he? Like he manages to use kids' toys and household
Yes.
objects to send an intergalactic message to the other side of the solar system, and then they come and
Yes.
get him. You know, and that's what it's all about. It's just like, let's get ET home. And then obviously, you know, the government rock up and cut off their house and show up in these suits like there's an asbestos infection or something, and then the kids are like,
Yeah.
no, you're not going to take him from us. We get him home. And it all leads to that incredible escape on the bikes through the streets and the suburbs. And then, you know, that ending, like, oh gosh, you know, every time I watch it, I cry. I can't help it. You know, it's
You
just,
can't help it.
you know,
You can't help it
it just
because he
it
feels
shows
like he's
everything about
leaving.
being human, doesn't it? Love and friendship
Yes.
and saying goodbye. And oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah, and see, another thing with that scene for me is like the story is ending, and I'm so happy that they never made try to re have a remake. Fingers crossed that they never
No, no.
try, and then no
Spielberg would never
sequel
allow
or
it.
E.T. Part 2.
No.
And so it's a standalone classic, and
It
I want it
is.
to remain that way. I did a sketch the other day with of course, with E.T. I've done sketches with him over the years, but there is one in particular that I did a couple weekends ago, just a small sketch. You can see this one.
Home. Oh, I love it. And is he riding Jaws? Is he riding the shark? Yes.
and he's saying home.
Home.
I just thought it would be funny to have two iconic 80s. Well, yeah. Jaws is from the 70s, but
yeah. And also a Spielberg,
characters, anyways.
Yeah.
Together.
That's really cool. I like the way you mesh and meddle all those characters together. That's really cool.
Yes.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. So you mentioned the Reese's Pieces scene. Is there any other scenes in the film that stand out for you just as we sort of wrap up our chat?
There are a lot of scenes. I like the scene where there was a convergence.
Mm-hmm.
Some sort of, I don't know, they had what happened really with Elliot and E.T., where E.T. was digging into the refrigerator and Elliot was at school.
That's
and
right.
He was eating the potato salad, and then he went and got some beer, and then Elliot started to affect Elliot.
Yeah, E.T. got hammered. That's my favorite scene as well, where he's just like,
I like that one.
Falling over. It's great. Yeah.
I found it funny that the mother didn't figure out that Gert wasn't that short during the Halloween. Because she was way down there. Oh, that's, say hi, bye, Gertie. What was wrong with the mom? Was she a little tipsy? Because she's way shorter. E.T.'s way shorter without his head extended than Gert.
Yep.
Now, when he extends, he's way above her. But, you know, when he was like, would have just been waddling.
Yep.
He would have been. And then there's the scene where he says, home, when he saw the Yoda.
That's right, Yoda.
This is so many.
Great.
Well, I guess they wanted to put the Star Wars reference in there.
Of course, yeah.
That was pretty neat. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it's a great
film. I liked that, like you said, mention about Elliot having like his time of victory and triumph, because he was teased by these guys, Santa Supremus, zero charisma, all this stuff, you know. And so at the end, he told them that we're taking him back to his home.
Yep.
And they saw that there was really, so he was the man of the hour.
He was.
He stepped up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He gave him a moment and, you know, my heart was already racing just the way that those sequences leading up to the bike, not just the bike itself, but leading up to it. There's this buildup of, we're going to go and get them, you know, and all the guys got together. They pulled it. Each one of them got their, they put the hoods down and, you know, they're getting ready with their bikes. And
it's great.
To me, that was everything.
It really is.
Of course, it crescendoed in to the scene with the bikes, but the lead up, I like the lead up of things because it's just like all that excitement. You can feel it in the music. It's picking up. You know, John Williams, he knows how to put that stuff together.
Yep.
And so all of it. Because he had like not some of his revenge, but that was his moment. And I was happy that Elliot had his moment. E.T. was in his glory because he had basically been resurrected. So he had this white on. He's glowing. He's so happy. His heart is, you know, you can see his heart and he's happy. And the flower came back to life.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
Yeah, really beautiful.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
All of the excitement. I felt all.
Yeah, it's great. It works on so many levels. It's just it's a classic film, you know. It really is a classic in every way. Yeah, and I think between E.T. and Predator and Nightmare on Elm Street, you've done each film justice. You know, we could talk about just one of these films on a three-part podcast, really, if we wanted to.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but obviously we crammed it all in, and you've covered it really well and highlighted what makes these films so special to you and for anyone who hasn't seen
them. Oh, I didn't have any notes, guys, so,
you know?
Yeah, I'm just kind of winging it.
No, you've done great, PT. Thank you. And, no, it's been great. So thank you very much for coming on My Movie Story and sharing your stories behind these three films. And yes. Getting people reinvigorated and re-inspired, hopefully, to go back and watch them. You know, even the non-horror fans might give A Nightmare on Elm Street a chance, or maybe we've scared them off altogether. Either way, you know, we've done our job. We've talked about these films. So thanks, E.T. Thanks for dropping by. And we've got Yoda as well. Love it. I'm fascinated what else you've got in your collection there.
I'll show you what else I have.
Yeah, please do. Please do before we go. We have Darth Vader. Hi, Darth Vader. Excellent. He's featured on the podcast a few times already.
Oh yeah, that's why, because of the Empire, right? Empire Strikes Back
Yeah, we've done
is
the
one of
original
my
trilogy.
favorites.
Yep.
But it's been done, so
Yeah, all good. All good. Yeah.
it's okay, it's all good.
Excellent. Well, great, three great films. Really glad we've added those to the My Movie
Yes, it's a
Story
blast.
canon.
Thank
And
you so
yeah,
much.
thank you, PT. It's been a pleasure. And we will share your links to your podcast so people can have a listen to you. And yeah, thanks again
Sure.
for being on My Movie Story.
It was fun. Thank you so much.
All right, take care. Bye.
Take care, guys.
Thanks for tuning into My Movie Story. We hope you enjoyed today's episode with our special guest and the movies that we talked about. Don't forget to hit that like button, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and follow us on Spotify or your favorite podcast platform. Your support means a lot to us. You can also stay connected with us on social media for all the latest updates and special content, and you'll find our page on Facebook. Until next time, take care and enjoy the movies. See you on the next episode.